Teaching is our passion. We at The Wall Street Skinny are proud to announce that we've joined the advisory board for the iConnections Funds for Teachers initiative, focused on supporting the Ron Clark Academy and its pioneering teaching methods. Through Funds for Teachers, iConnections is dedicated to empowering educators nationwide by providing access to RCA's professional development opportunities. Events are being organized in major cities throughout the year to fundraise and support this incredibly important cause. All proceeds from these events will be directly donated to the Ron Clark Academy, specifically to financially aid teachers so they can participate in RCA's groundbreaking training programs. Please click on the link in our show notes to register for an event in the city nearest you. This is The Wall Street Skinny, a podcast devoted to exploring the financial services industry and making the world of Wall Street accessible to everyone. Hi, friends. Welcome back to The Wall Street Skinny. I'm Jen.
I'm Kristen.
And we are two lifelong friends with a combined 25 years of experience working and teaching on Wall Street, here to give you the skinny on what it is actually like starting your career in the private equity space.
Yeah, so today is actually the episode that I personally would have loved to have had back when I was starting in my career. So it's one thing, right, to hear from these senior thought leaders in the industry, but it's actually something totally different to hear from junior people who are going through the interview process now and doing their internships and starting out as analysts and associates literally in real time. And so we actually got to sit down with a member of the Wall Street Skinny community, Karina Petronova, who began her career at Vista Equity Partners, which, if you're not familiar with them, they are a behemoth, a huge private equity firm that's focused on investments in the software and technology space. And so we get into basically everything you want to know about what is the interview process like now? What is a day in the life like at the very junior levels? And she also had some really amazing tips to make you an incredibly attractive candidate, things that I actually had not heard anyone talk about before. So we get into all of that stuff and so much more. So I guess let's actually just bring her on and get into it.
Let's do it. Today, we are joined by Karina Petronova. And one of the coolest things about this whole project is that we've gotten to meet the most amazing people to whom we were not connected before we started. And Karina is one of those people. Karina actually reached out to us via email. And everyone who's ever tried to email me knows that it takes about 10 tries to get me to pay attention to you. And Karina was persistent and succinct, and she did a great job reaching out. Karina has such an amazing background and has real life on the job experience as someone who is young coming up directly into the world of private equity. So we wanted Karina to get on here and share her story. So Karina, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And I'd love it if you could please walk us through your background, you know, your education, how you got interested in finance, everything.
Yeah, thank you. No, I'm super excited to be here. And first time when we connected, and I told both of you this, I've been listening to your podcast, and it's just, there's few kind of women-led podcasts that are both entertaining and educational. And so I definitely listen to it, you know, as I'm getting ready to go to work or just on my commute. So super excited to be here. I was born in Ukraine, moved here with my parents when I was 8 to the Chicago suburbs. So as I say, pretty Midwesternized at this point. Been here ever since. Went to University of Chicago, stayed local, studied econ and Russian Eastern European studies. May or may not have had an advantage there. I'm the latter one with the language, but I call it my GPA booster. But yeah, so going in, I didn't really know what I wanted to do or study for, like, a lot of immigrant parents, right? Like doctor, that's like the safe job bet. And but I think the finance route is a just as well risk adjusted, you know, sort of career path. And so I knew I was interested in business and in finance in general, but I had no idea what that meant. And coming to Chicago, there's just so many opportunities and different organizations and clubs, and you have to apply to go to them as well. They had like a women in business organization. There's this program called Trop Business Program, because UChicago doesn't have like a undergrad investment banking workshop or finance degree. So we don't have like classes where they teach you Excel or they teach you how to do valuations. It's a lot of outside of class prep. And their whole thing is, right, they teach you how to learn. And so you do all these like theorems and proofs at econ, but it's supposed to, you know, like expand your ability to learn and ask the right questions. And so there was a steeper learning curve in internships and jobs, but I think that still my kind of the liberal arts education was helpful. So I think like through Women in Business, I joined AKSI, which was like their business fraternity. I didn't even know what like investment banking was, or just in general, because my family wasn't in finance broadly. And so it was a whole new world to me. So like the Trot business program, that mm-hmm. is a program where your sophomore year, every week you do 2-hour sessions at the business school. And so they even have mm-hmm. one like business dinner etiquette, like how do you properly eat at a business dinner? How do you present? So they got really,
could you teach me how to properly eat at a business dinner? Because I eat like a wild animal. Like my food.
They were like,
is
don't slice your lettuce, fold it. Like it was a whole new learning experience.
Fold your lettuce?
Like it was just very
amazing.
Yeah. They got very technical, but it was very helpful, you know. So, and they require you to take 2 classes at the business school. We had the option of taking classes at the business school. So I took about 5 classes. They're like financial accounting, operations management. I took competitive strategy. And so it was really cool. It was definitely much more like case study focused, kind of similar to like the Harvard HBS case studies. And the undergrad was much more like theorems and proofs and calculus and linear algebra. Yeah. And so it was a little bit of a different experience. And so we had that opportunity. But yeah, I'd say it's definitely like there's organizations from AKSI. There was a lot of like knowledge exchange. They had a drive online of like different Excel resources and things like that. I didn't necessarily get an internship through being part of a business fraternity or anything like that. But I think it's just the knowledge you gain mm-hmm. or talking to people about like, oh, they did an internship in consulting. Like, what do you actually do? Like, what's mm-hmm. investment banking? What was that process like? So that's, I think, the benefit for me.
So talk to us now, just, I guess, about the approach you took to the summer internship recruiting process. Jen and I have talked about how it is starting earlier and earlier, and it seems like you need to have your sophomore internship and then a junior internship, and you're recruiting like a year plus in advance. So can you walk us through how many firms did you interview
and
with?
And when was it first on your radar? Again, knowing that freshman year you came in, knowing nothing about finance, knowing nothing about the internship process, recruiting process, when did that light bulb go off for you of, okay, it's time to start this process?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say like beginning of sophomore year, probably when I saw a lot of my friends who were like a year or so older starting mm-hmm. to apply. And that's what I heard, right? You need to secure that sophomore internship to get that junior one. And the junior one, you know, fingers crossed, converts into like a full-time job. And so there's all this like, you're doing kind of like the backwards mental math of like, when do I start? Mm-hmm. And it is crazy because I don't think, you know, you're so young going into college. It's like, how are you supposed to know what you want to do for full time? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say that kind of beginning of sophomore year when I started taking like the financial accounting class, that was my first like real life kind of business course. I did, and this was not very widely known, but UChicago has something called externships where it's like 5-day long internships with alumni. And so they have a platform you can apply, and just alumni who went to UChicago or the business school are willing to host, you know, an undergrad for a few days. And so I did 3 of those. I did 2 in New York, 1 in Chicago. And the one in Chicago I did, it was at Houlihan Lokey. It's one of the investment banks here. It was a 1-day long externship, like a kind of shadow experience. And they called me like, hey, you know, if you're interested, we're starting a sophomore summer program if you'd want to come intern. And so I was like, wow, yes. Like sophomore year, I already have a banking internship sophomore year. So
and that, you didn't have to go through another application process because you'd already done the externship. You were automatically
and that I was there
internship.
For that day. And I think that that's kind of what they gave, right?
Like interview.
That was basically the interview. But I didn't know that for me, it was just like, I want to figure out what you act like.
What is an investment bank?
Yeah, because I know that's what I've heard. Like, right, everyone goes into consulting and private equity, investment banking, but there's so many other career paths out there that I feel like are not talked about, or that a lot of people spend a few years in this space and then go off into. And so my goal was really to understand it again, because my family wasn't in it, so I had no clue. So that externship converted into an internship, and having that on my resume was very helpful, especially going into junior year summer recruiting.
That's a great path that we hadn't spoken about previously, you know, these little itty bitty resume builders that suddenly are a huge ticket in. And so I think that that's really important for our listeners to think about, that if your college doesn't offer something like that, that could be something that you effectively structure for yourself.
Yeah. Or even like reach out to alumni on like LinkedIn or something. Hey, I'm really interested if you have an opportunity even for a day or two to come and shadow or something like that. Because the thing is, we did have a lot of representatives come from different companies to speak on campus. But that's like a room full of like 100 or so undergrads. And it's so difficult to stand out because everyone has a very similar, right? Half of them were in the same organizations. We all go to the same school, same degree. So kind of finding a way to stand out if you do like kind of these one-off research. And sometimes people won't respond, but sometimes you might get someone who will reply. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that for me was like the externships that I talk about. It's not very well known, but it's mm-hmm. a resource. So
that's awesome. Your proper summer internship. Can you walk us through what that process was like, what your projects were like, with whom you worked, how you were evaluated, all that fun stuff? I'm really curious to see how recently things have or have not shifted in the summer internship versus when I did it back in the dawn of time.
And this is the sophomore year you're asking about, right, Jen? Or sophomore year and then junior? Yes, yeah, sophomore.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so sophomore year was the banking internship. They had mainly junior summer interns who they like flew out to New York. They had a training. I think it's very mm-hmm. typical. Go to the head mm-hmm. office and you do a week or two of training and then you come back. So it was me, myself, and two other sophomore interns. And so it was not a very structured program. So a lot of it was like me going around. Like when I joined the first day, I didn't have like a set of here's the projects you're working on. It was a little bit of like walking around asking, okay, what can I help with? What can I do? It was a little bit of like, you get what you put in type of thing.
Uh-huh.
What year was this, by the way?
Summer 2017.
And I do think that the sophomore summer internships have become more robust. Even so, I mean, again, they were relatively unheard of when we were going through the process 20 years ago. Yeah. And now they've become much more standard. But so you were at the cusp, I think, of that sophomore internship becoming more the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's tough because you're a year into college, right? You don't have that much knowledge under your belt. So they can't really give you anything else to do that.
You're barely legal to vote at that point.
Yeah. So it was crazy. Definitely very limited from that perspective. And it was a little bit of, you know, helping the junior summers or the analysts or associates or like shadowing them and kind of what they're doing. So there was a little bit of that. It was much more loose from that perspective, but I think that
much more entrepreneurial too, because the junior year summer programs are so well established now at this point that there is a much more well-developed framework within which you can be evaluated. How do you, you know, thinking from the standpoint of a manager, how do you evaluate a sophomore summer intern who you're like, well, we don't really have anything for you to do, but like, go figure it out and we'll decide if you're ready to come back for a junior year summer. Did everyone get an offer to come back for their junior year?
Of the three of us, I think like two of us got the offer to come back.
What do you think you did that made you get that offer?
I'm not sure if this was it, but I do remember, so my hours were pretty set, like a 9 to 5. I was an hourly intern at that time. And right. With the investment bank, how it works is like the MD or the VP reviews, and then you get comments at like 4 or 5 p.m. And because I was very strict on the hours, I couldn't get that much more work after 5 p.m. And mm-hmm. so I talked to one of the higher ups and I was like, okay, can I just like shift my hours a little bit so I can stay until like 6 or 7, but maybe even like, I still kind of, you know, even come in just like a half an hour or something later. I didn't come in that much later, but it was just nice to like talk to people, network and et cetera. But the actual work, I got a little bit more time. And I think that helped stand out because I also wanted to learn. I wanted to get that experience. And so even that like 1 or 2 hours later mm-hmm. to actually get to see a little bit more work. So, but the way I see it is an internship is like a 10-week interview for either mm-hmm. the next year's internship or the full-time offer. And so reaching out, talking to people, like doing the coffee chats, as much as it sounds like, oh, you know, meeting everyone. But yeah, it kind of shows that you're interested in and, you know, building rapport with people, kind of seeing if you'd be a cultural fit. The way I think about it, it's just as important to fit with the people that you work with than like the actual job itself. Like the people you work with can also make or break the job, especially in something like that you're working long hours. So it's helpful. 1,000%. It's a two-way street, right? They learn about you, but you also learn about what they do, the people, et cetera. So.
Yeah. And so then talk to us about how you get your offer. And then what made you decide to pursue private equity?
Yeah, so I actually declined the return offer. I didn't have the opportunity to leverage it. It was kind of like a shorter fuse. Oh. And so
Was it an exploding offer?
It wasn't an exploding offer, but I wouldn't have been able to, you know, have that offer open for like months on end. They need to know, right? Are you going to come back or should we recruit? So that's totally fair.
Understood. And then when did you actually start the private equity summer internship recruiting process?
I knew I wanted to go into private equity mainly because I was really interested in understanding like what's a good business, what's a good investment, kind of seeing from the other side. That to me was very interesting. And I think like talking with friends and all that. So I started applying kind of right after that to different firms, either in Chicago or New York, just everywhere. Some of them were smaller firms. And right, like the summer, the private equity internship was very much up and coming. So that was like mm-hmm. a very new thing when I was starting. the way I see it is a lot of the private equity firms kind of like quote unquote outsource their training to investment banks, which is why people do like the 2 year. Yeah. But I think they've also learned its ability to get like younger talent right away and kind of train them rather than retrain them, but train them in our way, kind of how we do things. And so that's kind of, I think, how it started to evolve. And I applied to different companies and some of them were much smaller. And I was asking a little bit about what's your summer process like, do you have a set class? And I really wanted to be at a larger firm where there was a class and like structured training, working with different people, personalities, and just seeing different projects. And being with a class, I think, is a very helpful learning experience. And so one of my friends actually approached me after the summer internship about starting our first like private equity club on campus. And so I think that that was also very helpful to have on my resume and that experience and exposure. And so we started a mentorship program with the business school's private equity club, and we got one of the professors to be like an advisor. And so that was definitely helpful in kind of setting apart my resume as well. So I was doing that. And the girl who actually had the idea for starting the club, she was like, oh, I went to this like women's networking event and here's a link for Vista Equity Partners. And they're recruiting people for a summer internship. You should apply if you're interested. I've heard of Vista before, but I didn't really know exactly what they were, kind of what they were doing. And so I knew I was also very interested in tech. I've done startup work at tech firms before. And so really liked that space industry. So I applied on the link. I didn't know people there or anything. I just kind of applied through the process.
Yeah, you didn't go through some formal on-campus recruiting process. You went through like the general HR link. Wow.
Which is like, it was just through a link.
Yeah. And that's that's like the hardest way to get a job.
Yeah.
Exactly. And can you describe exactly what Vista is for people who haven't heard of it?
Yes. They focus on software and tech private equity, one of the large behemoths in the space, several $100 billion fund that were started at the beginning of 2000. So have been around for quite some time, have a huge portfolio. They have several offices across the US, a ton of people on their investment team. They have like a Vista consulting team as well that works with the portfolio companies. And so they focus on private equity, but also kind of earlier stage, kind of growth equity. So the different funds kind of focus on the different stages of the companies and life cycles is how I would say it. They have other kind of public investment arms, et cetera. But you know, I was applying to the private equity kind of investment role. So yeah, unfortunately, I would say the industry is very much like, because they see so many resumes, right? They look at the school, the caliber of the school. I don't think that having an economics degree helped me in any way. There's definitely people who were in the internships who've done very like, they studied history or something that didn't have anything to do with finance necessarily. And I didn't learn anything in my economics classes that helped me. So, but I do think that these kind of like HR links or these different opportunities kind of open up to other high caliber candidates that don't necessarily, you know, go from some of these target schools.
Yeah. So can you now, I guess, walk us through like, what was the interview process like and the technical questions? Like, that's what I'm like so interested in is always like the technicals.
Yeah. So there was one, this wasn't at Vista, this was another interview process where I did have to do a paper LBO. So they just gave me like a piece of paper. They gave me some assumptions high level, but I think I don't necessarily think that they were looking for like, will you get the right answer, right? It's important to get the right answer, but it's really kind of like talking through the thought process live and how you go about it. So I think that's the most important thing and kind of showing that you did your work or at least preparing. So I don't think that that necessarily will make or break it, but I think that that's really what they're looking for. So the interview process, I applied, it was like a resume. And then I got a link for, they do like these cognitive behavioral tests. And a lot of companies are going into this, which, and I think part of this is to like open up the pool to students who are not at target schools necessarily, but mainly looking at, you know, so they do like these logic tests and then they have like a behavioral and like personality test. I'd say it was like 20 minutes, like 50 questions. There are like these like shapes and things like that. And you have to find patterns or there's like quick math questions. So a lot of companies are starting to do this. I don't think that this is Vista specific. My current company also had something similar. Mm-hmm. And then they do a personality test, which is also like, how do you describe yourself? And you kind of like click different, you know.
Which is always so hard, by the way. You're like, well, what is the circumstance in which we're talking? Because if it's this circumstance, then I would behave this way. If it's this circumstance, I behave this way. I always find those so hard, but anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like you can kind of gauge like what they're looking for in, you know, it's like they give you a scenario. It's like, how would you react, you know, if there's an answer, like I'll start yelling something, you know. But at this point, I still haven't talked to anyone really. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they review the results and then you get invited to the interviews. And so that's really when I actually started meeting people for the interview process. This started, I would say, in December. I secured, I got the offer beginning of February.
How many rounds of interviews do you think you had to ultimately get
that? I think it was around like 6 or 7 interviews.
Wow.
So it was quite a lot of interviews. And they were all like, I'd say like 40 minutes or so.
So like no interviews. Like final super day type thing that you would normally have in like a banking interview?
So they did have a super day, but I had more interviews because I was actually studying abroad at this point, which, you know, I'm very grateful that they even considered, because they could have been, oh, we have all these other candidates, you know, but they were able to adjust to that.
So can you, I guess, now walk us through what the summer internship experience was like in private equity?
Yeah, we started with a 2-week training. And I think they have a very kind of unique training setup where for internships and for full-time, they don't kind of first week, they bring in someone who teaches some of the Excel training, et cetera, but they really have like the other private equity professionals take time to do the trainings. So when I was there full-time, we do some of the trainings for the interns or for the new full-time. So it's all internal. It's kind of like the people who work and do this every day are the ones leading the trainings. And so first 2 weeks was trainings on the history of software, technology, and the history of the firm and the different branches. And they bring in folks to like speak about their career paths and kind of the day-to-day, how they work with the portfolio companies. So most of the like nitty-gritty trainings that we had were led by analysts, associates, senior associates. So they're still working in Excel, you know, in their day-to-day, mm-hmm. they're relatively kind of either did this training themselves a few years ago. And so it wasn't necessarily like the most senior people.
So they're new enough trainings. That they remember what it was like not knowing.
Yes, exactly. What it's like. Yep. So that's what I think is helpful, is they're kind of one or two roles more senior. And so they've been there recently. So that was the process. It's 2 weeks for the internship, because the internship is 10 weeks. So they couldn't have, you know, like a 5-week training. So that was the 2 weeks. And then you get, there's like a summer staffer. So it emulates like the full-time staffing experience. And you kind of, you start getting staffed. And it's not like everyone gets staffed, you know, 8 a.m. and Monday morning, but it's more gradual, either different projects that are, you know, doing some market research, or you get staffed on a live opportunity working alongside kind of staple to an analyst, you know, and you shadow them and sometimes, quite frankly, you know, a lot of it was taking notes, or you're helping them out with some kind of Excel analysis, and they're teaching you and training you along the way. And so, you know, they understand it, you know, you only had a 2-week training, your summer intern. So it's like I say, it's more so like a 10-week interview for, are you willing to put in the work? Would you be able to work here? Would we want to hire you for full time?
So as you were doing that, how did you find mentors who were going to help you to actually learn this stuff? And what was your process of finding those people to actually, you know, ensure that you succeeded?
Yeah. So I definitely say we had like 10 to 12 interns, I think. So it was understanding I need to stand out and to secure that return offer. And so something that I did, and again, this was also like a two-way street, as I call it, of do I also want to come back and work here, is doing the like coffee chat. So I just reach out to people. Yeah. And it was scary kind of reaching out to like a VP as an intern, but like I still reached out to one or two, but mainly I reached out to analysts and associates and senior associates, because really they're also the ones who are making those return offer decisions, since you'll be working more closely with them. And so it's also easier, right? They've been in your shoes a little, not too long ago. And so you're kind of closer to them in that way. And so I did a lot of outreach and like coffee chats. And I think that was important to keep in mind, is like doing the work, but not just being behind a screen and like actually getting up and going out and meeting the people out. We were all in like a conference room together. And so it's very easy to just be in that conference room and not go out and see the rest of the team and everyone. So sure. I did a lot of outreach via email, like, hey, you know, I just joined as a summer intern, trying to get to know everyone here. I'd love to find some time for like grab coffee, or like we grabbed smoothies a lot in Austin. that was where the internship was, just like talking to people. So I think that's very important.
Yeah. I think one thing that people underestimate is, like you said, it's a 10-week long interview for you, but you need to be proactively, effectively scheduling interviews for yourself with these other people under the guise of interviewing them. Right. Yeah. And so I'm curious, what kind of questions would you actually ask in those coffee chats? Because we get so many questions from our community about, how do I make that impression? How do I sound authentic? To me, the obvious ones are, what would you have wanted to know when you were in my shoes? Talk to me through how you solved this problem. What is the culture like here? How does one fit in, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm curious what your questions were that you were asking, if you remember.
Yeah, I'd say I definitely, what I didn't do was necessarily like, oh, you know, like, this is why I want to work in private equity. This like kind of repeating the inner process.
Not like pitching yourself. Yeah.
So I mainly was just going in like, I want to learn about you as a person, kind of what you do here, why you enjoy the work, like what's your day to day. And so I was mainly just, even if they bring something up of like, oh, I just got back from this vacation. Oh, okay, that's cool. Tell me about, like, even just like building rapport that way rather than directly interviewing, but also asking them, right? Like, oh, you know, if they had a really unique like career change, or like, oh, like that's interesting. How did you decide to do that change and switch? Or what's the most interesting deal that you've worked on? Or like, what's
So you got them talking about themselves, which is obviously and rule number one. Everyone loves talking about themselves.
And so that's
but I do think it's important that you were in equal measure having just a human conversation and building a connection with that person, as well as asking specifics about deals and the lifestyle and the path and all that fun stuff. So I do think that's an important thing to hammer home for our young listeners who are thinking about what it's going to take to get that return offer. And I also think I really want to, in private equity jargon, double click on the fact that you said the analysts and associates are the ones making the decisions on who comes back. And they are the ones with basically the hiring and firing power versus a lot of people think, oh, it's going to be the MD, it's going to be the GP, it's going to be whoever it is. They probably have much less, I'm guessing, interaction with the summer analysts than at a bank, perhaps, where there's a little bit more of a direct touch point. And so it's so important to make that connection with the relatively junior people because they have the most power in this situation.
Yeah, even when I was there full time, it was really the analyst associates, senior associates who would conduct first and second round interviews. And then you get to like the VP level. And so the first people you kind of go through are those analysts and associates and right, there's more junior people. So I definitely say that that's often like overlooked, right?
From
that
perspective,
but yeah, I definitely like even just reaching out as an intern, it was scary to like go on a coffee chat with someone who, you know, is so experienced and want to make a good impression. So again, just get them talking about themselves or just have like a conversation or talk about my experience so far, you know, what I'm working on, et cetera. Making sure that people know you, kind of who you're as a person, would you be a cultural fit in addition to doing the work itself.
All right, two questions. Can you just like walk us through a day in the life as like an intern? What were the types of models that you were working on? Were they giving you modeling assignments as an intern? Or was that almost reserved for when you were actually an analyst?
Definitely no modeling as an intern. We did, because they are focused exclusively on like software and technology, right? There are certain analyses and diligence things that you do to evaluate software and tech businesses. And so that
are you like testing out the app? Are they like, go play Candy Crush and let us know?
No, so there's like, even in Excel, it's like a retention analysis for like dollar and customer retention. And you pull all these formulas and you put it into PowerPoint and kind of look at that. Or you build like the cohorts of their dollar pipeline for their new business. So those are kind of things where you pull together like financials. And so I definitely did not have any technical chops to evaluate their app or anything like that. And that was like a separate team that would do that. It was people who have actual like coding or, you know, technical background and bring it together. So there was no modeling in the summer, and that was mainly, and every firm does this different, but even as an analyst, it was more so of that. It was like that financial diligence and market diligence as well. And the modeling started a little bit like your end of your second year as an analyst, but you get trained on that when you get promoted to associate. So every firm does it a little bit differently, I think, when you actually start modeling in your day-to-day. But again, you can get that exposure, right? Because you have access to all their resources and drive. And so if you're interested, because it's such a big firm, right, you can find someone to, you know, help you, train you, or if you want to do one-off, like, hey, I'm just curious about this. Can you like, do you have like 30 minutes to walk me through? I saw you worked on this opportunity. Just have a few questions for you. So that was the benefit. And I'd say like, that's my recommendation starting at a large firm right out of undergrad, is because you get to work with so many people, build relationships, and they often have the most well-built out programs where you get that like structured training. And that's not to say that like starting at a small, you get different type of experience and that's just as valuable. But at least for me, I needed to learn like the social fabric. How does the whole corporate world, how does that work? Like how do you send emails and how should you sound and dress and act? And like that I learned through osmosis of being at a large firm and just seeing different things.
Can you talk to us about getting the return offer then, what that was like, navigating that into the full-time job?
And by the way, what percentage of people actually got it? Because I know you said there was 12 interns. Like how many people actually got the return offer?
I think like half of us got it. It changes year to year. So some years, most people got it. So, you know, so it really, I think it really depends. I think out of that, like two or so or three were like sophomore interns. So that was a little bit different.
And then did they hire a few extra people for full-time that were not interns? Like when you
went into
the class?
They did external recruiting and they also had like laterals. So people who have 1 to 2, maybe 3 years of experience either doing like credit, you know, they were working in credit or consulting or something different, not necessarily investment banking. So that's what I think was like the benefit of them doing these cognitive behavioral tests, like just getting more diverse candidates. Don't necessarily.
I love that. Why are not more places doing that? I mean, again, it seems like so many places, it is such a standard, almost cookie cutter thing where it's like, you didn't go to the target school, you didn't do da, 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 da. And I do think it would be really helpful for more firms to do these types of tests. right? I feel like you could be finding these diamonds in the rough that just didn't have the opportunities that, you know, many of us did.
So yeah. Or even sometimes, that those schools might have a robust undergrad finance program that we didn't have. So, you know, there's like pros and cons are different, but yeah, I definitely think that should be more.
The non-target schools, like they do have finance, and like a lot of people are studying finance. They actually do know that stuff and they really want this. And again, like you can have brilliant kids who didn't go to UChicago, Princeton, Brown, and they still would be fantastic. They have to get the opportunity. And it's, I hope that more places start doing that. Cause I think that would be just like,
well, that's the thing, right? Valuable. That like starts in middle school. Cause then your high school determines your college.
That's exactly right.
It's
although
so crazy.
I wonder to what extent firms do have all of this
Maybe
as a standard thing on their website, but you still have the gating mechanism in place of, at the top of your application, it said University of Chicago. You know, like there is a funnel somewhere within HR that's
what your score was
on that test.
Work there if they went to a similar school, part of similar organizations. Yeah. Like, I think that's very natural, right? It's kind of
course.
A similar experience. But I do also say that some, like, UChicago's, I'd say it's on the smaller side. Like, our undergrad was 4,000 or 5,000 or so. Some of the other schools have 15,000, 20,000, 30,000. So, like, your alumni network could be much broader. I definitely would lean into that.
Okay, so you get the return offer. You go through your senior year dancing a little jig because your life is all squared away. And you show up now having graduated. Can you walk us through that process of onboarding? How did that differ, if at all, from that summer internship process you had as far as training? Were you still being trained by the junior people on the desk? Did they bring in outside training? And then what was it like finally being day one on the desk?
Yeah, so the training was 4 weeks. And first week, they brought in someone externally who did like a Excel training. And then after that, they bring in the internal. So some of those trainings, there were definitely like repetitions from what I had as an intern, right? Like, for instance, like intro to the firm, but they definitely got a little bit more deeper into it. So we had assignments and quizzes, kind of like a mini boot camp. And then at the end, you get like a capstone project where you pull together like a little, you know, an investment review for a company, would you invest or not? And then you present it and you get, they ask you questions. So it was kind of going through that like a mini, you know, diligence process. And through that, you get matched with a buddy who's helping you. So you're not kind of doing that on your own. And then you get a mentor.
Was the buddy
as well.
Helpful?
Yes. And I personally got lucky because, you know, I'm still in touch with him. Like, I went to his wedding 2 years ago. And so it was really great.
Someone who was an analyst at the time or
he was an associate. Okay. He was an associate. Yeah. And so you get a buddy who they're your buddy for the first year. It's kind of like, you know, as you're ramping up. And then you also get concurrently a mentor who's meant to be for the duration of your time there. And I guess, you know,
that's great.
Still be in touch with them if you, you know, part ways, go different directions with the firms, but the buddy is kind of for that first year. And then it doesn't have to be like a formal thing necessarily. So that was helpful where it's not, you know, I definitely say like, if you're looking for mentors, it's not like, oh, would you be my mentor? It has to be more like natural and organic. And
yes.
That was the benefit of they kind of matched us. So it wasn't like I didn't have to ask anyone, but you get informal mentors along the way.
So you've spoken a little bit about how the infrastructure and framework of being part of a larger organization, a mega fund, right? Mm-hmm. Helped from both the standpoint of having the training resources, having the personnel resources, all of those things. And you talked about the benefit of that. Can you speak a little bit about what the day-to-day nitty-gritty of the job was by comparison to someone who might be working in a lower middle market, upper middle market something in private equity at one of these mega funds? Because the impression that we have, I'm curious to see if it actually bears out in reality of what the day-to-day is like. How much are you actually in the weeds with the portfolio companies versus being one level removed, if you will?
Yeah. So my day-to-day as an analyst was mainly, I'd say, especially in the first year and a half, like 100% new deal work. So looking, evaluating new opportunities, right? And they're like, you get a ton of reps just because they're doing so much work. They're seeing so many opportunities. And so as I mentioned, like they have three funds that are structured based on like the life cycle of the company.
Yep.
So the earlier one, they look at, you know, companies that could also be like several million in revenue. So kind of seeing that like lower middle market or early stage investing in like series B, C, D, that as well, all the way to like billion-dollar companies. And so that was really helpful because I got to see the different stages and the experiences. And that helped me understand, okay, where like right now I focus on lower middle market. And so having that breadth of experience has helped me understand if I want to focus in the space. And so I was doing a lot of New Deal work. And so it was either you're doing market research, do a lot of either customer calls or talking to experts or just doing desktop research. And that's on the market side. And then the financial diligence side, kind of as I mentioned, it's like the banker sends you a data room and the analyst is the one who goes through that data room. And
that's why I say they're the worst. They get
back at us with it's 5 p.m. Friday, like, hey, hope you have a nice weekend. Here's a 200 file data dump.
Are they still the worst? Like, I remember in 2010, everything was miserable because you would, it would be like a password protected PDF. You'd have to take that information, put it into Excel, but you couldn't copy it. Are they still that miserable? You have to download one by one.
They're definitely gotten a lot better. I think there's like data side. Some companies though, if it's not like a bank top process, they might even be like a Google Drive, right? Like the founder uploads a few files and it's all messy. So it really varies, right? If you're looking at a much larger firm bank process, it's all much cleaned up because they have a whole team, right, who are doing that. So that's what I would say is like looking at new opportunities since you had a ton of reps, especially as I said in 2020, like software and tech was really big. And so, doing a lot of work and get to see a ton. And then as you get closer into kind of the second, it was like a 2-year analyst program, you start to do a little bit more portfolio work. So after you start working on an opportunity that closes, they acquire the business, then you might be doing some like valuations work or some other kind of ad hoc analyses that, you're kind of helping out with. And then you start moving into portfolio. And then as associates, you are actually working closely with the portfolio companies.
Got it.
As well. And so the time gets a little bit split. And then as you go higher up, right, you focus also on the sourcing piece as well and talking to the investment banks and what are the companies on the radar, they're coming to market, et cetera, sourcing opportunities. And so it becomes much more of like a people business the higher up you go, mm-hmm. right? And I think in general, it's very much a people business.
That it reminds me of, we spoke to my former colleague, AJ. He works in private equity. He's like, look, we're selling dollar bills. My job is to convince people that my dollar bills are worth more than like someone else's dollar bills. It's a people business. And I think like
more green than those. Yep.
Yeah. People forget that. So can you talk to us a little bit about what the structure of the program looked like? So it sounds like you said it was a 2-year analyst program. After the 2 years, what typically happens? Would they promote people or did they expect people to go to business school and they would essentially hire from an investment bank? What was the process and why did you decide to leave and go to a lower middle market fund?
So for my class who I started with as analysts, all of us got promoted. Just to put it into context, right? So typically it's not given that everyone always gets promoted, but I think we had a very strong class. And so everyone just happened to be promoted that year. And that's why I always say it's not like there's no set like number where, oh, we don't promote, you're not necessarily like directly competing in that way against mm-hmm. someone else. Because if you do a good job, they'll keep you. And so when I say like 2-year program, I don't mean like, I know some firms are like a 2 and out for associates, but it's more so 2-year program of you get promoted after that 2 years. After I got promoted, I really wanted to, lateral as an associate. And so, as I mentioned, I got to see the whole spectrum of like different stages of companies. And I also wanted to stay in software and tech. Like I really like the space because it's specialized enough, but it's not niche to the sense of like, I'm looking at waste management software one day or like ed tech the next day or like healthcare IT. So it's like, you still very much broad, but you get to understand what things to look out for because it's a similar business model. So that was my thing. And I wanted to join a smaller firm and kind of my current firm is much, much smaller. So I kind of swung the other way. Our whole firm right now is the size of like one deal team that we would have had. So there's six people. And so it's very entrepreneurial, very much like, as I say, rather than being managed down, there's a lot of also like kind of managing up just because much skinnier.
And how did you find this new opportunities? Did you go through a headhunter or was it something like you had established a relationship like independently and decided to make the move? So how did you ultimately make that transition?
Yeah. So I'd say it was very difficult to like do the job and recruit. I would say like from my experience, I haven't gotten a job through a recruiter, right? Like the recruiter's clients is who pays them, which is the firm. Mm-hmm, and so that's who mm-hmm. they have their best interest in mind. And like, sometimes I'd even get recruiting emails and they're like, oh, we think you'd be great for this job. Please send us a 2-paragraph essay of why you think you'd be a fit. But like, you just reached out to me. And granted, that's not always the case, right? Like people get jobs through recruiters because the recruiter his job is to find the next associate, senior associate, et cetera. And so I actually, how I found this current job in my current role is I connected on LinkedIn with our then VP. He was promoted, but I just reached out to him on LinkedIn and they were recruiting at that time. And he's like, oh, hey, are you looking to be back to Chicago? I think he thought maybe I was in New York. I was like, no, I'm in Chicago and, recruiting. He's like, oh, great. Love to set up an intro coffee or lunch. And so we did that, met in person. And then he's like, oh, would love to invite you for the interview process. And so I went through all the stages of the interview process, like a consulting case study. They had a model test with presentation, the cognitive test, personality test, meet everyone on the team. I mean, it was not a large team to meet. So that's how it happened. And it was just also one of those things where it is like similar to the externship. I just reached out to him and he, you know, luckily responded. And so it wasn't through a recruiter.
Well, and I wouldn't say just too, because I think it's really important for our listeners to understand that all the opportunities that you've secured for yourself, you've secured outgoing. This wasn't someone came onto campus and you dropped your resume in a box. This was all you reached out to Houlihan Lokey. You applied on Vista's, right? You went through LinkedIn to get to your VP who ultimately brought you into your current firm. So a lot of people think like, oh, no one's asking me to come apply for this job. Therefore, I'm not going to get it. You've shown that you can do that all by yourself. So I think that's a really important lesson.
And that's also telling of like, not all jobs are, especially I think in private equity, they're not all posted online. It's Vista and other comparable ones. Like they have a whole like HR and recruiting team. And so they have a whole formal process, but some of the smaller firms don't necessarily have that formal process and it's more opaque. There's no one job posting with all the finance jobs. And so some ways you have to go through it, your friends from college and you're like, oh, hey, you just spreading the word, you know, that's what I also did. I talked to them and I was like, hey, this is what I'm looking for my next role. If you have anyone, either your current firm or other firms that are recruiting, they're like, oh, sure, I'll like forward your resume and your name and et cetera. So I definitely do that as well, just like reaching out to other people. Right. And because then when they start to recruit and you can do the same for them and so vice versa.
One question I'd love to ask you, because I think so many people see private equity as what they aspire to work in. And it's like, okay, if I want to get into private equity, I have to do 2 years investment banking, and then I exit to go into private equity. And you started in private equity. And so I guess one of the things that I'd love to understand is, what do you see as some of the pros and cons to starting in PE and foregoing the 2-year investment banking sell side analyst program? Do you see any downsides? And so I'd love to kind of hear your thought process for people who are thinking to themselves, you know, I have this offer, I can go work at Goldman Sachs for 2 years, or I can go work at Houlihan Lokey, or I can work at XYZ Bank, or I can try to pursue this private equity role. What are some things that you think that they should think about as they evaluate their career path?
Yeah. And I feel like I also get that question. And I would say there's definitely benefits to starting in banking, right? And some people do stay in banking for the duration of their career, but there are senior people in the industry.
MD's got to come from somewhere.
Yes. So they're the ones who stick it out.
Usually it's the associate pool, but yeah, it's the MBAs.
You get a much broader understanding of corporate finance in general, kind of see different things. And because that's been the more typical path, oftentimes they have large classes. So you're working alongside others from undergrad and they have robust trainings just because the process of investment banking to private equity is still more typical. So I'd say that's the benefit. And you're working at larger firms and just get to see a breadth of opportunities. But I would say that there's people, right, who after private equity maybe decide they want to go into like hedge funds or corporate development or VC or start a search fund, or you can go FP&A, so like financial planning, and or some people go into business journalism. And so there's like a breadth of opportunity. So not necessarily everyone stays in private equity, right? Because it's really two sides of a coin on the same transaction. You're on the different side of that transaction in a way. So there's people decide to do widely different things, especially also if you're doing like, let's say, because I only focus on software and tech, I couldn't easily go into real estate private equity because it's like physical assets versus digital. It's like, very different. So I'd say from that perspective, understanding, do I have a specific industry in mind, or is generalist better, or do I actually know that you want to go into private equity, or maybe I'm more open to different opportunities. So there's definitely benefits, I'd say. Also, I just think that even for me, this whole new world of like working in corporate America is so new, and like even understanding how do I email properly? How do I, not use as many exclamation marks and points? And like, there's just like all these different things. And I think because in investment banking, right, it's again more typical to start from undergrad and like you can build rapport with people who are just recently in those shoes and can show you the way there. So I think that's also very helpful from that experience.
Yeah, the email etiquette is something that literally in training, we used to address that. It would be like, hey guys, so first of all, you can address people by their first name. Second of all, anything you write, assume it's going to be read. And by the way, you don't want this email to end up on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. So be smart. And whenever possible, you usually want people to use your personal email for personal discourse.
Yeah. I mean, there's even things of like when you send an email, you start from like more senior to a few lines to the junior. And these are just things that no one's going to necessarily write out. Here's a guide to emailing, right?
And one other pet peeve is like getting people's names right. The number of emails that I get addressed to Kelly, it's like, hi, Kelly. And I'm like, not my name. Not my name.
But I had a client at BlackRock who called once a day, every day for 2 years. And I would always pick up the phone and say, hey, it's Jen. And he'd say, hi, Jess. And I was like, what? And I honestly assumed after a certain point this was like was a power play or
a 1,000%. Yeah.
But like I wasn't going to correct him because he was a client. But I was like, well, I just give up. I guess my name is Jess now.
Yeah.
The last question I have for you, Karina, and we don't need to get into specifics, but you know, we talk a little bit about the difference between investment banking and private equity. One of the reasons that I think you were saying that people think private equity is the pot of gold at the end of the proverbial rainbow of investment banking is the potential for really asymmetric upside on your pay. And we do not need to get into specifics here, but I'm just curious, based on the conversations we've had with recruiters who have been on our podcast in the past, our understanding is that at the big mega funds, at the analyst and associate level, typically you're not participating in carry, that it's a salary bonus structure, very similar to what you see in investment banking all throughout, but that potentially at some of the lower middle market, private equity funds, there is more room for negotiation on that pay structure. Can you speak to what the overall structure tends to be like based on your observations in the industry?
Yeah, definitely. First things first, out of undergrad, right? I think both investment banking and private equity offer really, really high compensation for someone starting their first job. And I think that that's like, for me personally, right, so important to keep in mind is majority of people don't make that much, right? It might be a little bit incrementally less or more at certain firms, but it is still more than the majority of people make out of college.
I was going to say, we had my sister-in-law on talking, what is a doctor making? And pediatricians make less. And by the way, pediatricians with like 14 years of schooling who had to go through not only undergrad, but med school and residency and fellowship. And, you know, now are like saving little kids' lives and they are making less than what a first year analyst makes.
And so, you don't have to go to 10 more years of school.
Yeah.
So just like to put that for context, right? Because if you go to the mega funds, of course, the overall compensation tends to be larger because larger share of the pie, right? In general. But yeah, at the junior level, it's typically you have your salary and bonus. And sometimes they do have other kind of ad hoc retention bonuses as well that you might get, not necessarily just at the end of the year if, you know, the firm's doing well. So that's always really nice too. But I'd say like the carried interest or if you get to participate in co-invest for opportunities. And so that typically happens at the more senior level, but at smaller firms, right? Because it's a much more lean structure. Sometimes you might be able to get it as an associate as well. So it really depends on the firm, right? I think if you're at a large firm where there's like hundreds of investment professionals, might not be the case as an associate. But I do think from my understanding, like the bonuses for private equity is a little bit more stable year to year compared to, I think it was just recently reading articles like, oh, you know, junior bankers are, you know, disappointed with bonuses because it was like a slow period last year. And I think that it tends to be a little bit more stable.
Which makes sense, right? Because it's deal based if you're at an investment bank. And that can like be totally changed year to year. Whereas at a private equity firm, it's based on assets under management, right? You're getting paid a fee based on how much money you are managing. And guess what? There's lockup periods.
And that tends to be more stable, yeah.
LPs can't do shit. Yeah, it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, and this is one of the things that I think benefits private equity. We've talked about how longer term investment horizons pretty much benefit everyone all the time because it sort of like protects people from being dumb and pulling out at the lows. Like Jen, this is a true story. I was at the airport and I said to Jen, I'm like, hey, can you come pick me up? And she's like, sure, but maybe take an Uber. I was like, oh, but I've already been waiting. It's fine. So then she gets in her car. She starts to drive. And at that point, I'm looking, I'm like, you know what? Why don't I just take an Uber? She's like, do not stop out at the lows. And that's one of the things that you get, right? And like the hedge fund model, you have people that can stop out at the lows, whereas private equity, shit takes a turn for the worst and you can weather the storm and wait for things to recover and do incredibly well. Anyway, the point is that it makes sense that private equity would be more stable because of the business model.
So yeah. And because, right, if you have majority ownership of that business, you have opportunity to work alongside them. And I do a lot of like portfolio work as well. And so you're able to like write a ship, you know, in that way more so.
The last, very last question, I promise. If you were to give yourself or someone like you advice, so someone who was in college and starting this process, what would you tell them? What piece of advice would you give someone who's just starting this process?
Yeah. Don't worry about being behind, especially in an industry that's like, oh, you have to start as you're, you know, in kindergarten and like preparing for getting into this industry, and take the time to understand, do I actually want to go into this piece? Because there's so many other jobs out there as well with a ton of potential upside that you might even enjoy like 10 times more. And so like, you know, I happen to find a company and a job that I really enjoy despite going through the path of my older friends were going into this as well. But maybe for other people, they want to start a business or do something completely different. And so that's one thing I'd keep in mind. And then just trying to find ways to be creative about either externships or reaching out to people. Like the worst thing that can happen is they don't respond, or they say no.
Or they say no.
Or they say no. But maybe if you reach out enough, they'll say yes. You don't know. So like,
it just be no, not right now. It
might be, or no, right now. Or like, no, but I know someone who's hiring at another firm. And so those would be my recommendations as well. And then one other, in terms of like more tactical guides or books that I would recommend, people talk about like the Holy Grail that you should be reading. It's like the MNI guide. It's like the Mergers and Acquisitions guide. And there's 500 questions that you should know. And I think that a lot of interviewers actually quote unquote expect you to like even know. It's just like, how do the three statements link? Or like, it's some of those like baseline questions. And then Heard on the Street, it's for like a quant trading, but they do brain teasers. And that's how I did a little bit. I did have, you know, throughout they ask them brain teasers. And so that's a helpful book.
It's funny because that's actually the name of a Wall Street Journal column that I usually recommend people read, because they will take deals, but they break it down. And it's almost like they're explaining it to their five-year-old. So it's a column. And I think that it's probably still, but it's so interesting that it's also a book. So
yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, we get countless questions about the specifics of this, and neither of us having gone through this process, especially not recently, this is absolutely fabulous. I mean, this is invaluable.
Hopefully this is helpful.
And we cannot thank you enough. We wish you all the best of luck in your career. Congratulations on all your success.
No, thank you both so much. This is super fun to get to do this.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to The Wall Street Skinny. We are more than just a podcast. So follow us on TikTok and Instagram at The Wall Street Skinny. If you're a visual learner, we have content that will help get you up the curve from valuation to Excel to bond fundamentals 101. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, where we will be publishing in-depth tutorials on all this and more.